You're listening to WSDL 90.7 FM. It's time now for the Wallops and Assateague Islands Report with your host, Robin Rothschild.
Hello, I'm Robin Rothschild, and welcome to the Wallops and Assateague Islands Report. My guest today is Mike Whalen. Mike is the field site manager for Orbital Sciences down at Wallops Island. Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Robin. Good to see you again.
It's good to see you, Mike. So, first of all, big congratulations. You did have your hot fire test recently, and I understand it was perfect.
Yes, it was. I'll kind of just elaborate some. We had our first attempt for the hot fire, or stage one for the Antares vehicle. It's more, you can consider this a developmental test, just to verify that our stage one and the launch pad and the fueling farm works well together. And then lighting the engines and running them for 29 seconds gives us confidence in how stage one performs. So our first attempt for 7K, we got down within 1.5 seconds, and the flight computer had picked up an issue on the ground side in terms of a pressure, a system pressure. It was out of spec or too low. So the team, we aborted that test attempt. The team was able to fix the pad issue with the pressure system. And our next go-around, the countdown was extremely smooth. A guy named Tony Gaio led the countdown for our team. He did a great job. And we got to the final count, and the hot fire started, and it ran great for 29 seconds. All the pad systems worked. The big giant water tower that cools the flame trench that worked very well as well, for the test. And all in all, it was a really good event.
Well, that's very, very exciting. I know it's been a long time coming.
Yes, yes, it has been.
And you know what, Mike? We're actually going to go backwards to kind of the very beginning. You know, we have a lot of new listeners. We're in a new areas now, like Salisbury and Rehoboth. So, Mike, why don't you kind of take us through the timeline of how we even got to this point where there was a successful hot fire test, and soon there's going to be the launch of the brand new Antares rocket.
Yes. Okay, if I can back up to about the 2008 timeframe, Orbital was awarded a contract to basically deliver cargo to the International Space Station. There's two kind of parts of the contract. One is the launch vehicle side to get a spacecraft into orbit, and that launch vehicle is the Antares. The other side of it is the Cygnus spacecraft, which the Antares will be giving a ride, give them a ride to low Earth orbit, and then deploy, separate the spacecraft, and the spacecraft will make its way to the International Space Station to deliver the cargo. So we were awarded this contract back in the 2008 timeframe. So my job is to essentially work with the team here at Wallops to get the launch vehicle together. And we're also a host to the folks that build the spacecraft, the Cygnus spacecraft. The Cygnus spacecraft itself is fabricated back, or parts of it are fabricated back in our Dulles, Virginia facility. So they'll build up the spacecraft, they'll do some testing there, and they essentially will ship it here to the launch site. At the launch site, it will be married with what they call the pressurized cargo module, which came from Italy. And those two parts will be bolted together, and they'll do some work on the spacecraft propulsion system. And then at that point in time, when we're getting ready to fly, NASA will basically show up with cargo, and they'll put it in the PCM, pressurized cargo module, and load it up. And then the spacecraft will make its way over to Wallops Island, and they will go to a fueling hall to take on fuel for the spacecraft. And then it makes its way to X-79, the horizontal integration facility, where we process the Antares vehicle.
And that's the building that I've been in.
Yes, that's the building you've been in, yes.
You know, it's interesting just thinking about that, because I was on Chincoteague and had the local radio station in 2008 when all this was happening. I mean, just that building alone, and the $95 million brand new launch pad to launch this type of vehicle. Just
yeah,
astounding.
I think it's incredible when you think about how quickly the NASA team was able to get the horizontal integration facility up and running for us. As a matter of fact, we just hit a kind of a birthday or celebration here for our second year in a horizontal integration facility.
Oh, my God.
It was early March of 2011 we moved in there. And then as well, the pad construction effort was quite complicated. I think a lot of us could say that we maybe underestimated the complexity of the pad and systems that need to support our stage one. As I mentioned before, we've got, there's air conditioning systems for the various bays in the vehicle. There's also ground gas systems for liquid oxygen, RP1. We have helium and nitrogen systems. So there's a lot of things at the pad. There's hydraulic actuators to help raise the vehicle into place. And all these things are, have to be, checked out, tested.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
and get to the next point. But, the big takeaway is our most recent event, the static fire of a 7000 series static fire test, the hot fire, that actually was kind of proof in the pudding that the launch pad and the vehicle work and play well together, and we're able to basically get a rocket lit on the pad. And our next big step will actually be our first flight. But we're at a really good point in terms of where we're at right now.
Now, this first flight that you're going to be doing, I'm actually a little confused about this. Is this the test flight, and this is going to be the test vehicle?
Yeah, let's. You can think of it as stepping stones. Okay, we just had our first stepping stone. That's a 7000 series test and a hot fire test,
okay.
And now we're branching out for our first flight, the test mission. Now, for test mission, we are not going to install a Cygnus spacecraft on the front end of it. What we are going to install is a mass simulator that represents the same volume, mass, CG of a Cygnus spacecraft. So what we are doing on that simulator, though, is installing some instrumentation so that when we do fly, we can collect data from the flight. Bottom line is we need to advertise back to the spacecraft community what kind of environments they can expect when they fly on an Antares vehicle.
Because this is a brand new vehicle.
Right.
So you want to get as much data as possible.
Right. And that will help us in terms of understanding what the payload will see. Now, I will say that from the 7000 series hot fire test, we did collect a lot of data from that. And I'm happy to report that it looks like everything's within family that we expected. So that's some good news. That gives us a lot of confidence. But you really don't exercise the other events. You have the startup transients, you have your main engine system shut down, you have stage separation events, the acoustic energy that leaving the ground. So all those things need to be understood to get to the next step.
Let me ask you, from this hot fire test, do you have any idea of what the acoustics are going to be like when the rocket is physically launched?
Yeah, the hot fire test, I heard a lot of people could hear it on Chincoteague and various parts of the eastern shore here. I think what will happen as soon as the vehicle gets up and off the launch mount, it'll be away from the acoustic suppression ring where it injects the water into the plume. So at that point in time, I think it's going to be pretty loud.
Yeah. Just a bit.
A bit. You will hear it.
It's so exciting, and it's just so amazing. Since the time that I've been back on Delmarva and down on the Eastern Shore, that the differences I've seen that has happened at Wallops Island. I've mentioned this a couple times on the program, but I think that in 5 years there was only 2 Minotaur launches, or maybe 3 Minotaur launches, since I've been on the Eastern Shore, and that was about 2007, 2008. So I understand that Orbital's going to launch a couple Minotaurs this year. Am I correct with that?
Yeah, they have the LADEE mission that's coming up, I think, in the August timeframe. So they'll be rolling out here. And, the nice thing about it is that's part of the Launch Systems Group that I work in. So we can kind of help each other out a little bit in terms of staffing and whatnot. So.
Why don't we tell our listeners a little bit between the difference of a Minotaur rocket and the new Antares rocket that's going to be launched?
Okay, a Minotaur rocket is a solid rocket, based on solid rocket motors. it's a little bit easier in terms of your care and feeding for launching a solid rocket motor. You can think of it as you know, kind of a bottle rocket that you might use at the 4th of July or something like that. It's ready to go. You just need to light the fuse. It's a little more complicated than that. But you know, the ground system to support a solid rocket motor assembly is much easier in terms of just processing and whatnot. The Antares is a lot more complex because stage one requires liquid. We don't load the liquid in the HIF. Basically, we have to bring the vehicle to the launch pad, and that's where the pad systems will load the liquid oxygen, and they also load the RP-1. So, and the pad systems as well have to deal with other issues such as liquid oxygen is actually subcooled, so it runs through a liquid nitrogen heat exchanger to subcool a little bit more, and that's how we have to load the vehicle up. So all these systems, and there's pressurant systems and purge systems, they all have to serve a stage one, and it has to be just right, because just like on our first attempt for 7K, the flight computer said, no, ground system, you're not right. I can't fly with that, or I can't do my hot fire. So the complexities, it seems like orders of magnitude greater for Antares in terms of the ground side to support it.
Now, this new launch pad, and I just want our listeners to understand that they are now three different types of rockets, or will be, that can fly out of Wallops. And the first one is your smaller sounding rocket, mm-hmm. that also Orbital
yeah.
builds those. And what would the Minotaur rocket be classified as? Is that a small rocket or a medium?
I'd say it's a smaller rocket. It, in terms of capability, it's not near mid-class, medium-class like Antares.
And it looks big
yeah.
to me.
Yeah, it is.
I remember seeing the Minotaur fly for the first time. It was just so cool.
And well, I should point out, too, that back in the 90s, we did do some Pegasus air launches out of here.
Oh.
I worked on that program back then. We have basically a L-1011, a modified L-1011 that'll carry about a 50,000-pound solid rocket motor assembly, the Pegasus, a three-stage rocket, up to about 39,000 feet, and then it drops from the plane, and then the rocket lights and flies out. So we did do those launches in the past down here on the Eastern Shore.
So now this Antares rocket, that's considered a what class rocket?
A medium class. Yeah.
And how much bigger is that from the Minotaur, let's say?
Well, that's a good question. It's, I'd say it's probably, you're talking a couple hundred thousand pounds when it's all fueled. It's probably a couple hundred thousand pounds heavier.
And how about taller?
Definitely taller. I'm about 131 feet with the Antares vehicle.
Oh my gosh! I mean, that's just going to be really majestic to see that thing standing up, ready to go.
It will definitely.
Now they had to. My question is this launch pad that they built, because you know when you hear the numbers like $95 million going into a launch pad right here on the Eastern Shore, it's just that infrastructure alone is pretty amazing.
Yes.
They had to build that because of the size of the rocket as well as the type of fuel that it uses, correct?
That is correct. Yeah, and we back in the day we did work with Mars and some other companies like RS&H out of Florida did some of the design activity for the pad mainly because they did stuff at Kennedy. And BRPH was the main construction firm that monitored, oversaw the pad construction here at Wallops.
With what you mentioned, it is my understanding that actually when it was being determined where this rocket would fly from, that Kennedy was one of the places that they were considering.
Yeah, that was one of the runner-ups, and it ended up coming here to Wallops.
It's amazing. I don't think that, any of us can really wrap our head around it, what this could possibly mean to us economically.
Yeah. Well, I would say that, I'd say that the Eastern Shore of Virginia and Maryland has seen some of the benefits already in the past several years. We've had a lot of staff that come to the area and live and even people that travel here. And they spend money. They eat food just like you
they
and me.
They stay in the hotels.
Yeah. So, we are putting money into community, and there's a lot of local people that we've hired to work at our facility. So it does mean jobs, and I think it's a good thing for this area.
You know, also, I know from the Minotaur launches that I've been to, that those two or three launches have brought in thousands of people as spectators. I mean, I've seen them, and that's a Minotaur, and this Minotaur rocket is, to me, it's big, but as you say, it's about how many feet tall is that rocket, a Minotaur?
Actually, I don't know off the top of my head.
But it's like maybe half the size of the Antares, something like that. And, I mean, I just could not believe the number of spectators that that brought in from all over the country. And I was fortunate enough to be on the in the press area where they had all the photographers.
Were you near the U-40 building for that? Or
yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah. I don't think they use that anymore.
Yeah. Actually, I was there for the hot fire test.
Oh, you were? Mm-hmm. Okay, because I'm hoping to be there again for the Antares launch. But another interesting thing about what I heard about that press site is that that is the closest you can actually be to the launch site in the country. I don't know if that's true or not, but somebody told me that. I'm going to have to verify that.
Yeah, we'll have to talk to our friends at NASA on that one.
I think so. I think I'm going to call Keith after
the
show.
Yeah, let's give him a
call. Which I just thought was pretty darn cool because it's like 2 miles, and I heard that the next closest is like down in Kennedy, which is like 3 miles for the spectators. But they are really anticipating a lot of people to come and see this Antares rocket launch.
Yeah, I think I know that the orbital team and is working with NASA, and they're kind of evaluating that because that is a concern because you know, you don't want to create traffic jams locally and things like that. We call them guest ops, guest operations. And I'll tell you that since the hot fire, I've had a lot of phone calls and people who've been to Wallops maybe a year ago, and they're kind of touching base with us again. Which is good. So I expect a fair amount of folks wanting to see this go.
Well, if it's anything like the Minotaur, I mean, really, it was fantastic because it just brings, it's another event to bring people into the area and to spend money, and it's exciting. And it's right now, I mean, there's the shuttle's retired, so this is one of the main vehicles that is supplying the International Space Station.
Yeah.
Now, what other rockets are supplying the space station at this point? Do you know that?
Actually, SpaceX is one of our competitors, and they're working on supplying the space station as well. They just had a flight last week delivering cargo.
And this is the only two from the United States?
Yeah, as far as I know, it's just us and SpaceX
right now. I mean, that makes it even more exciting.
Yeah.
So how is everybody feeling at Orbital? They must be feeling just great.
I will tell you that leading up to our hot fire test, the team down there have been doing just a great job, just trying to keep things together and keep it going. And after the hot fire, I remember we did it on Friday, went in on a Saturday, and people were just grinning from ear to ear. They were really pleased and happy that we got that behind us. It wasn't easy, but the team really was proud of the fact that we got to that point and it was successful. So I think the spirits and morale is way up right now, which is good because we got a great team of people there.
You really do.
We really do.
We didn't touch on some of the people that you have from I can't remember, Czechoslovakia.
Oh yeah. The stage one core is basically the two tanks. One tank that carries the LOX, another tank that carries RP. That's part of the stage one assembly. They come from Ukraine.
Ukraine.
And there's a company called Yuznoy that is a design bureau for this stage one article. And then there's Yuzmash, is a manufacturing company. It has some heritage from Sea Launch. It's Zenit based. And going to them with their expertise, bottom line, keeps our costs down. So being a commercial program here, we're trying to watch the pennies and do this in a cost-efficient manner. So we went to them. They had the Heritage hardware, and I think I've mentioned to you before, Heritage is critical sometimes because if you don't have any heritage with your flight hardware, it's a lot of effort thrown into the development and qualification testing to get something ready to fly. So sometimes it's easier just to go to somebody who has that expertise and get them to help you out. So we go to them for the stage one core, the two tanks, and we go to Aerojet for the engines, the two AJ-26-62 engines, and we have the second stage with solid rocket motor by ATK, and that's about 30,000 pounds. It's solid rocket motor ready to go. We have the one bolted up to test mission right now. We have another one for COTS demo ready to go. And, a lot of the avionics assembly are built in our Chandler, Arizona facility, and they get shipped out to here, and we integrate them onto the vehicle. And, a lot of our software team and whatnot's back in Chandler, Arizona. So it takes a lot of people to make this happen.
Now, I remember a while back, I guess this was about a year ago, when you had the a big part of the rocket come from Wilmington, Delaware.
Yeah, the stage one core.
What that was? And I mean, they had to move traffic lights.
Yes.
They had to widen some roads.
Yeah, it was, thankfully they didn't have to widen the roads, but we go to a company called Diamond Heavy Haul that is used to hauling very large items down the highway. Bottom line, the whole, from the front bumper of the truck to the aft bumper, back bumper of the trailer, I think it's like 194 feet long.
Oh, my gosh.
They were able to make it down. We did a Pathfinder without a stage one core some time ago, and then we've hauled four stage one cores to the island. So right now we've got the stage one and the pad, a 5K, 7K test article. We've got the stage one for test mission. It's all integrated there in the HEF and the COTS demo core. And then we have another core that's off on an off-site facility.
And something else that just came to my mind, what's so different is this, the HEF that you have, this building.
The HEF, yes. Mm-hmm.
That you, the rocket is built.
It's all horizontal in the HEF. There's one exception. We build up the main engine system in a vertical fashion, but then we break it over horizontal to make it to stage one. In the HIF, it's all horizontal processing, but to get the vehicle out from the HIF to the pad, we use the transporter erector launcher.
And that's so you can just roll it out, basically.
Yeah, we have some special transporters that take the TEL out to the pad, and then we hook it up to the hydraulic systems at the pad, and then we can erect the vehicle and mount it to the launch mount.
And I do want to remind people that, like you said, you got down to the last second for the first hot fire test, yeah. And there was a problem. That, these rockets go in when there's a date, you definitely want to be flexible.
Yeah.
Because obviously, any little thing. I mean, I remember seeing a Minotaur that it took 2 weeks, which was just so stinking exciting. I didn't mind keep going back. But it got down to, maybe the last minute and one little thing. Thank goodness that you can detect these things.
Yeah. Well, the flight computer did its job. It saw a problem and it did the right thing. Going forward, though, for our test mission, we have some flexibility for that first flight. For the second flight, we're trying to, for COTS demo, we're actually trying to intercept the space station. So with the Cygnus spacecraft. So timing's critical on that one.
So briefly, we've got to wrap it up,
okay.
Mike. The next test flight is going, the first test flight, I should say, will be sometime in April, you're looking at.
Yeah.
And then the timeline after that?
We're going to try for COTS in June if we can, but things kind of stack up here. So
In the summer of this year.
Yeah,
we're looking at. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming, Mike. It's always great seeing you and talking to you, and just congratulations again, and real exciting stuff coming up.
Thanks, Robin.
That concludes our Wallops and Aztec Islands report for today. Have a wonderful day.
This has been the Wallops and Assateague Islands Report on WSDL 90.7 FM. Robin Rothschild is your host. Chris Rank is your executive producer and technical director. For podcasts of this program, please visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net.
Welcome to another page in the family album. In this